Okay, it's apple time. Let's call to order the, what are we, the executive committee meeting for July 31st. Roll call, please, Marcy.
On the roll for the executive committee of July 31st, 2017, Director Barrett.
Present.
Director Joya. Director Groom.
Present.
Director Mitchoff.
Here.
Director Ross.
Here.
Director Sparing. Director Wagon Connect.
Here.
Vice Chair Hudson.
Here.
Chair Niss. We have a quorum.
Okay, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Public comment is open. This is a time for anyone in the audience to address the executive committee on any item not on the agenda within our purview. Do we have any cards, Marcy?
I have none.
Well, I gathered that's what your head shaking means. We have none. Okay, second call. Anybody out there? Last call. Public comment is closed. Let's go to the minutes for the approval. February 22nd. Do I have any adjustments, corrections, motions?
I'll second that.
Okay, motion Mitchoff, second Wagon Connect. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Seeing none. Oh, we got to you quick, Valerie. We're on to the Hearing Board Quarterly Report, January through March 2017 and April through June 2017. We have the report from our chair of the Hearing Board, Valerie Armento.
Good morning. Very nice to greet you this morning. I am the current chair now that Terry Trumbull has completed his tenure on the board. During the first 6 months of 2017, the Hearing Board held one pre-conference hearing, and a second pre-conference hearing was canceled at the request of the respondent due to a conflict. We had two hearings and processed three orders, one for the dismissal of a party and two orders of abatement. Matters involved facilities in the communities of Petaluma, Milpitas, Fremont, and South San Francisco, so four different counties under the board's jurisdiction. And if you have any questions, I can answer them, but there's more detail in the written report that you received.
Questions now or continue?
That's it.
That's it. All right. That's it. Thank you very much, Chair Armento. Okay, we don't have any action on that. The next is the contract award for Spare the Air website.
Mr. Chairman, do you mind if we skip that item? Maybe we can go to number six.
To number six, Technology Implementation Office, the TIO update. If you got that one too, or are you delegating it to your left?
To my right, actually.
To your right. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Damien.
No, we're actually really pleased on this one. As if you recall, last fiscal year, actually the beginning of this year, and in particularly the retreat, the board, we actually introduced this concept of a Technology Implementation Office. And today we're here to talk to you about some real exciting parts of that development effort. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Breen to introduce some folks, but also talk to you in overall about the office itself.
Good morning, Vice Chair Hudson, members of the Executive Committee. This morning we're going to be giving you an update on our technology implementation that focuses really on the strategic planning. So now we're beginning to put meat on the bones of this thing. We want to outline for you our current and future steps that we need to take to move the office forward. We're going to introduce you to our newly hired technology implementation officer, and she will take you through the next steps about setting up the TIO and give you an overview of the roadmap for the office itself and the considerations around the principles for the office. So... next slide, Marcy, if you don't mind. Actually, the other one. Yeah, perfect. So as Jack had mentioned, as part of our fiscal year 2018 budget process, we moved to set up this Technology Implementation Office with a view in part to realizing the vision that we have in our Clean Air Plan of a post-carbon Bay Area by 2050. We're moving to do this by incentivizing regulated facilities to incorporate low carbon intensity practices. Those are principally the over 10,000 regulated facilities we have under air district stationary source regulations, and also by continuing to support zero emissions vehicles and smart and connective technologies. The mission statement below, I think, really encompasses what the Air District wants to do. Ideally, if we had all the money in the world, we could very forcefully move into this area and push on that technology. Like we have with the electric vehicles, we've done quite a good job there. But relative to the picture as a whole, obviously hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, need to be spent to bring all of our industries in line. So we are going to use our funding as a catalyst for innovative technologies that achieve greenhouse gas emissions reductions in both the areas of zero emissions vehicles, smart connective technologies, and energy generation and efficiency technologies. So next slide, please. So in order to execute this vision, we've moved ahead and recruited our technology implementation office. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce you this morning to Renee Chang, who is our TIO. Renee joins us from the United Nations Foundation, where she was in charge of standards technologies and fuels for the Global Alliance on Clean Cookstoves. Prior to that, Renee was at the US Department of Energy, where she managed innovative initiatives on biomass cooking technologies and the environmental impact of biofuel production. The American Association for the Advancement of Science selected Renee as one of its 40 at 40 fellows for exemplary dedication to applying science to serve society with creative, innovative, and collaborative problem solving in addressing global challenges. Renee has a PhD in biology and medical informatics from the University of California, San Francisco, and holds a bachelor's degree in computational biology from Brown University. So, as I said, we're very happy to have her here today.
Welcome.
Thank you for the introduction.
You've got 20 minutes for your speech.
Go ahead. Okay. I think it won't be that long. Thank you for the introduction, Damien, and Vice Chair Hudson and members of the Executive Committee. Good morning. It is really a pleasure to be here and to meet you. And also to join an agency that really is a leader in air quality with staff that has such deep history and expertise in the field. So I'm looking forward to introducing the Technology Implementation Office and what our plans are. But first, I should say that I won't be the only one. We're currently building out a broader team for the TIO. So we already have a principal environmental planner who will be focused on identifying strategic grant opportunities that fit into the priorities of the office. Over the next month and year or so, we'll be also hiring 4 to 6 staff, which includes some realignment of the Strategic Incentives Division, electric vehicle staff. And we're also looking to build out a diverse mix of experience, including in the investment space, working with the private sector. We also are working on constituting a steering committee for the TIO, and that will include a mix of technology experts, representatives from our partner agencies, investors, people from the banking community, representatives from the Bay Area and other regions. And there will also be, of course, collaborations with the rest of the Air District, especially the Strategic Incentives Division, the Engineering Division, and Planning Division. We're also going to release an RFP for a consultancy firm to support us with a technology assessment. And of course, I've been already in conversations with a number of our partner agencies, experts in this area, to engage in some dialogue and look for informal advisors. So the goal of the Technology Implementation Office is really to make an impact on reducing greenhouse gas emissions and to have the Bay Area be a leader on climate action. But as Damien alluded to, there are a lot of things we need to do. There are a lot of opportunities, and there are also a lot of things that are already happening. So the vision is to have a strategic planning phase where we really look for the opportunities that will maximize the effectiveness, the innovativeness of the TIO, how well we can catalyze broader emissions reductions beyond what we directly do. How do we get other actors to engage and step up? And then we also want to base this on the best available science and engineering as well. So the strategic planning process is divided into three phases over the next months to a year. The first phase is to build a framework, to have discussions about what really are our priorities, what are our operating principles that we'll use to focus our resources and our efforts, and make sure we're not pulled in too many different directions. These priorities and principles will also be used to inform the design of phase two, the assessment phase, where we'll look at a number of different things to combine together in order to really prioritize. So the first piece of the assessment phase is looking at the emissions inventory and what are the climate impacts and other co-benefits as well, where we want to look for where can we get the biggest emissions reductions. We also want to look at do a technology assessment, which will involve looking at the best available technologies, but also what might be coming down the line. Also a financing model assessment. So what are the financing models, what kind of grant, what kind of loans, what will be most feasible and also sustainable? And then finally, a landscaping effort for who are various partners that we might want to work with. Who should we collaborate with? Where might we want to tackle different aspects of the issue? And all of that assessment will feed into the finalization and getting buy-in on a strategic plan for the TIO. And that'll then kick off the launching phase, where we'll be having a conference, implementing a communication strategy to get the word out and facilitate collaboration around climate in the Bay Area. We're having formal partnerships and then officially launch the TIO. While we're doing the strategic planning effort, we're also going to be working together with a strategic incentives division, especially on the TIO relevant technologies. And the plan is to shift the EV and charging programs, as well as the strategic grant opportunities, into the TIO over the next few months.
Brad has a question for you.
Yes,
you want to take a break.
Please go ahead.
I'm just a politician that needs to have some stuff, for my community. And I'm just wondering what do you see coming out of this? What kind of projects do you see coming out of this? I know it's not the final, this would not be a final word, but just kind of general.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll actually skip to this slide here.
Got him.
Yes. You want to get into the 25. Fun conversations already?
Yeah, thank you.
So where we are today, I'd be really hesitant to say exactly what we will do. But what we're thinking about is what are the principles for how we decide what we do? And I can give some illustrative technology examples that we'll be considering. But what I'd like to do through this strategic planning process is engage in discussions with all of you, with partner agencies, with the public and private sectors, to figure out what our priorities are, and then use those priorities to finalize what the technology focus will be, what the emission sources that we'll focus on, what they will be. And the idea here is we can really have more of a technology neutral and a financing model neutral way of engaging in what is important to us. And that, I think, down the line will make a lot of the discussions about exactly what we focus on a lot easier. More comments? Okay.
Well, give them a few examples of kind of the technologies that we're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll walk through some of what I have on this slide is some of the principles that we could consider. And in some cases, there are trade-offs that we'll have to discuss through. So as an example, on the risk and technology readiness scale, how risky do we want to be? How much do we want to focus on proven technologies? So a riskier technology might be electrified road systems, whereas something that has a higher technology readiness level would be electric vehicles. Another example would be the data-driven. Do we want to be data-driven, or do we want to really focus on the communications opportunities? So in that case, examples might be the data might say LEDs and building insulation and changing heating systems is a way to get a lot of the greenhouse gas emissions reductions. But when we factor in how catalytic do we want to be, if we want to bring in investors, maybe things like Internet of Things and drones and autonomous vehicles are where we want to go. So really there's a lot on the table across emission sources and stationary sources. And the goal of the strategic planning process is to understand what's important to all of you and to all of the stakeholders and narrow that list down. And I'm happy to share, we have a list of specific technologies that are under consideration, and then we'll use these principles to refine that list down.
Let me jump in while you're mm-hmm. on it, stay on the same subject, Brad, it might help. This year alone, I've probably been in 30 different offices in DC about mm-hmm. the autonomous connected vehicle mm-hmm. in particular. The single most enthusiastic office that I went into was the Department of Energy. Mm-hmm. The Smith brothers, Dennis and Mark Smith or whatever. Mm-hmm. Tall guys. They couldn't get enough of this information. And their information coming back, and I think it's the direction a lot of us are going to go, is smart cities. Mm-hmm. They couldn't shove smart cities down your throat fast enough.
Yeah.
And they believe that's where we're headed. And as long as you're talking about that, there's something for everyone. There's another thing I was going to bring up here, but I don't want to get caught like Brad, so keep going.
I actually will just hop back and just quickly mention that the planning process that we're talking about is aligned to the budget, where there's funding for the financing model assessments, the technology assessments, engaging stakeholders through communications and conferences. You'll see most of this is from designated reserves, so we'll have more conversations about exactly how that budget is where that goes. But there is an initial pot of funding that will allow us to get some of the most critical pieces moving forward. So we're currently in the process of putting together the steering committee and hiring additional staff. And I started already talking about this idea of having a conversation about what are our principles, what are our priorities. So I walked through some examples. Some other examples are, do we want to have a focused portfolio or do we want to have a diverse portfolio? Do we want to put our eggs in many different baskets or really bet on one horse? Sorry for all the different analogies. Another important consideration relating to the issue of catalyzing other actors and catalyzing system changes is how much do we focus on current sources versus changing systems? And in this case, I always think of an analogy from the 1970s of Betamax and VHS. And we don't want to put all our resources in Betamax when, even if it's not the best technology, we're heading to VHS.
Use a different analogy. Some of us went through that.
That's full of controversy still.
Sony, Panasonic, okay.
Yeah, well, technology has gone beyond Betamax and VHS. But that's the idea that do we want to focus on where the emission sources are, or we know things are switching to renewable energy. A lot of things are getting more connected with appliances and sensors. So where are we aiming for? And these are really presented as trade-offs here, but I think they don't have to be. And when there are opportunities to have win-win situations, like when there are cases where we can have climate benefits and health benefits and jobs, we obviously want to look for those. And I think an important topic as well is we want to have something that will really make sense for the region, but also in order for the Bay Area to be a leader, we need to really consider replicability as well. So over the next few months, we'll we'll talk more about these principles, what does that mean for specific technology choices, and we'll have the technology assessments underway as well. And the final slide is just an invitation to continue the discussion on these principles, on what technologies are of interest, and I'd love to engage more with you, and then for anyone who's dialing in, please feel free to reach out to me as well. Thank you.
Okay. Quick questions of Renee first. Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Renee. A couple questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, innovation is always more important than invention, because if it doesn't get used, it doesn't matter what you invented.
Yeah.
So just walk me through a little bit. So I've got a widget.
Yeah.
It's going to do this. Yeah. Do I go in front of like a Shark Tank panel that the board puts together? And are we this is in concept. My widget's in concept. I haven't actually, developed it out completely yet. Mm-hmm. The Air District becomes a partner. And if there is a partnership, is there a return on investment? Mm-hmm. But say something, the widget performs miracles, and mm-hmm. it's the magic widget, and but it doesn't mean anything unless its implementation is not enforced or somehow enforced, or its implementation used or required by the Air District. One, you've got a potential conflict of interest mm-hmm. question over here in ethics land, but mm-hmm. how would that work? And how would that work? Has that been developed yet?
Yeah, these are exactly the issues we want to consider with the financing model assessment phase of the planning, where there are grants and incentives and rebates and vouchers and different kinds of loan programs, revolving loan funds or loan guarantee programs, where I think the idea is to consider new options that the Air District may not have done before, but we need to work within what the mandate and the scope is as well. One option could be that the Air District focuses its resources on certain pieces and then looks to partners from the private sector to come in. It might be an investor could say, this technology, this widget is really promising, but we're concerned about XYZ. We'd be happy to put in more funding, but we need to see this first. So that's one option of taking the air resources, the Air District resources, and opening up new funding. And I think you also are asking about the role of technology and use and adoption of the technology as well. The TIO leads with technology, but I think we always need to consider, does this make sense for the businesses, for the consumers, for the homes, financially, socially, if we're talking about things that might require changes in behavior or lifestyle that should be factored in as well. So I think all of these are criteria for whether it's a Shark Tank-like panel or we maybe set up more specific criteria up front and then evaluate opportunities against that. Those are some of the exact considerations for evaluating the options.
Okay, thank you.
And I think
oops. Oh, you're still on it?
Part two. So would our regulated industries, would they be able to come up with a type of if you could find something that did this, and could they potentially be...
That's exactly it. That, of course, we always need a combination of carrots and sticks, and I see the TIO as the carrots, but also being someone to engage people in a conversation where someone may be motivated already and have things that they want to implement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions or improve the efficiency and save on costs. So I see the conversations that we're having is having people say, what are we interested in doing? And then supporting that to happen, as well as saying, what do we need to happen, and finding people to do it.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Jack.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and Director Ross, maybe this will help a little bit also just to add to Rainey's comments. This morning we wanted to basically introduce Rainey and introduce the TIO, let you know that we have been working on this since as early as this year when we started talking to you about it at the retreat. I did want to, though, if it helps, describe a little bit of the fact that at the South Coast, they have what's called the Technology Advancement Office. They get a dollar out of their registration, and it goes into the program very explicitly pursuant to state law. We're a little bit more focused on examining and assessing technologies that are out there to look to see how we can facilitate commercialization, if you will, implementation, which is very broad, and there's a lot to that conversation. We're not necessarily interested in advancing or developing technology, and I just wanted to make that distinction, Dr. Ross. I know you know that, but I think it deserves to be said, because we want to be able to, that's going to be important as to this group we assemble. We want to get folks out there that understand technology, I think they're referred to as technologists, and really help us as staff and board really examine what's possible, where do we sink our resources, as Rainey is indicating. But today we really just wanted to let you all know and introduce Rainey and get it off the ground. And over the next 6 months, you're going to hear more about this. We had thought that the right place to come back to is the executive committee.
Thank you.
As far as this office.
No, okay. That's great. Innovation, like I said, invention's great, but unless there's innovation and implementation, it just sits on the shelf. And, you know, knowing what we have to do is great, but how you do it is even more important.
I'd say thank you, Rainey, and I have a couple of comments if I can as staff. One, you brought up South Coast. What always worries me is L.A. just passed 2 half-cent sales tax and the amount of money that they're going to funnel through transportation and innovation in their metro lines is staggering. I mean, just Los Angeles County alone is, I mean, it's a state. The second thing is on your first page of 6, I guess, or last, next to last sentence, the staff is proposing the transfer of the electric vehicle and the enhanced mobility programs for the strategic incentive division to the TIO. Is there any thought towards going after this increased VLF again just for this? I mean, to me, the more money you can pour into this, the better. And I'll leave a last thing. You don't have to answer it. I was not exaggerating when I said the most excited department I went to, not DOT, not U.S. Auto Workers, Federal Highway, is the Department of Energy. They have a lot of money they want to do. Every year, our CMAs go back to Washington, D.C., and Randy's very effective. I'd give serious consideration of sending her with him to see what we've got going with the connected vehicles and back to the Department of Energy, because it's like they want to throw money at anything that says smart cities, and they are really excited about this and very excited about the electric buses. Jack, go ahead.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, we'll take that back. We're at the formative stages of this office, and so as you can tell, I just wanted to make sure you all understood that we have been moving forward. And with Rainey on board, it's a really important first step. And she's got a lot of great ideas. And I look forward to really having her infuse those ideas into the district.
Most important question before we take Damien's. Are we going back to 5 or up to 7?
We'll go to 5.
Okay, Damien, you're up. We'll go back to 5 after that.
One of the things I think that you will see in this area is obviously there are pots of funding out there that we can tap into. What we normally do is we have our strategic incentives fund dollars, and we use those to leverage these types of funding. So some of the areas that we'll be concentrating on will be obviously cap and trade money for advanced vehicle demonstration projects. On the station resource side, we definitely recognize that there is a need to draw some more money forward for our regulated facilities. And we will probably be talking to our legislative committee and a couple of others about what could be done in that area as we roll forward. We want to make sure that we do our assessment first so we know what we're looking for money for before we get to that point. But it's definitely a point well taken that, you know, we do need to draw some more money in for this.
Good. Thank you. Item 5, contract award for Spare the Air website redesign.
Yes, Chair, Vice Chair Hudson and members of the Executive Committee, the website for our Spare the Air program is a very important vehicle for communicating with the public when we call Spare the Air and what actions they might take when we issue that call to action. It's been a very useful tool. It's been great, but it's time to update it, and staff has gone through a process of identifying a contractor to help us with that. And Lisa Fasano, our communications officer, will give the presentation.
Good. Thanks, Lisa.
Good morning, Chair Hudson. As Jean mentioned, today I'm requesting approval of a contract for the Spare the Air website redesign. An RFP was issued in April this year, and we reviewed all submitted contracts by May, or all submitted contracts were reviewed in May. 7 were received total to our RFP request, and we had a team of 5 people from the Air District who reviewed all of the contracts that were received, or all of the proposals that were received.
Mark Cuban wasn't one.
All the proposals were reviewed and scored by members of both the online services and the communications offices. What you see here is the list of all the companies who submitted proposals to the RFP. They were both national and local companies. This is our scoring criteria that we use to determine the merits of each of the proposals. And then here, based on our scoring criteria, here is how each of the proposals scored. Against that. Silogy is a local Bay Area firm. They scored the highest, just over 90. They are an expert Sitecore consultant. They've worked with the district on various projects for more than 10 years, or for nearly 10 years. And this time they are partnering with Lowercase Productions, who has done work for MTC and many other Bay Area government agencies. So based on the review from both the online services and communications office of the 7 proposals, we would like to recommend the board of directors approve the following: authorize the executive officer, APCO, to execute contract with Silogy in the amount of $300,000 for website upgrades, and then also funding of the $300,000 was held over from fiscal year ending 2017, so we have those funds. I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, Karen?
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the scoring graph. And I'm looking at the scoring criteria. Nobody expects to get 100%, but can you give us what their grades were?
Silogy?
Yes.
They scored top for in the areas of responsiveness to our proposal. They really understood what we were trying to do here. They are experts and have an extremely experienced team, specifically in the area of Sitecore, which is our content management system. Their cost was very competitive against all the others. In fact, one of them was just off the roof, horrendously expensive. We were surprised, but Silogy was right there. And they are a local firm, and so that was a positive for them as well.
Well, I'm just, and I appreciate that, but the points, so how many points did they get on responsiveness of proposal, expertise? That's what I'm looking for.
I apologize. I didn't bring their specific scores. I can get those to the committee, though.
Okay. There's 5 categories, and they're 9, I guess, is that a 91 that they got?
Yeah.
So there's 9 points, and I'm just wondering if there was a preponderance of those points in one category over another.
Responsiveness and expertise were where they were strongest. And their third strongest was probably in cost.
So project management and references were their, if you will, weakest.
Yeah, they weren't weakest, but they were.
Are we talking 2 points? Oh, thank you. That's what would be very helpful.
Okay. So Silogy, they received
91.
For expertise, they got nearly perfect scores across from all categories. For design capabilities, they got nearly perfect scores for all categories. They were very high on cost. They only got one point. So
it's still not answering my point question. And if you don't have it, that's fine.
I don't.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be criticizing. I'm just, you know, responsiveness. Did they get 18? Did they get 19? Did they get 20? Those are responsiveness. I understand what you're saying is they understand our system, but 9 points out of, I'm just trying to figure out where they, I was just trying to figure it out. Thank you.
Okay, Carol?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'd be willing to make the motion that we recommend authorizing the executive officer to execute a contract with Sciology in the amount of $300,000 for website upgrades, architectural rebuild, and design services for Spare the Air. I know this company. I also know the work that we have done on other websites for Spare the Air, and so I think we're ready to roll.
Second. Motion Groom, second Ross. You have comments, Mark? Okay, any further comments? All those in favor say aye. Opposed? No abstentions. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Jack. You're up again.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Director Mitchoff, let us follow up with you directly with your questions.
On RFPs, that's something. I mean, I understand what their overall points are, but I want to know what their points are in every category.
We'll follow up with you directly.
And I'd like it for all of them, please.
Will do.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 7 is next. I'm going to alert everybody that after 7 is going to come 9. Before we go into closed session, so if you've got any comments or other business, get prepared. Jamie, you're up.
Good morning. So I'm here to provide an update on our My Air Online program, specifically our online permitting and compliance system. Haven't given an update in a while, so this is going to cover the work we've done last fiscal year, but also try to give you a preview of the stuff that we're working on currently and will be coming up. So a brief overview of the My Air Online program, which was formed about 4 years ago. It's focused on improving operational efficiency, accessibility of information, and the quality of service that the district provides to the general public, the scientific community, and to regulated businesses. And that's primarily done through mobile and web technologies. We have three parts of the program. As I mentioned, our permitting compliance system, or new production system, as it's been called, our public websites, and as well as a data management analytics team. So currently, we have several features that are live and being used on our new production system that support permit applications, annual updates, permit renewals, field inspections, and complaints. And just to give you a sense of the coverage on the permitting side, the boxes on the left here are all of the different types of devices that are supported. Which includes our most common devices, dry cleaners, gas stations, internal combustion engines, as well as our registered smaller sources of air pollution, some abatement devices, and emission points. And those sources actually represent 70% of our total number of facilities. So out of the roughly 11,000, we have quite a bit of coverage in the system. So just to recap where we are and what we've gotten to. This graph here shows permit applications that have been processed through the system. 2017 obviously is not complete, but you can get a sense that we've been growing and been able to adapt to the applications that are coming in for these smaller sources and smaller businesses. And in terms of revenue, that's reflected the numbers, and we've processed about $1.5 million in permit application revenue through the system since March of 2012. That was the original go-live date. On permit renewals, much higher volume, as you can see here. So we're in the roughly 3,000 to 4,000 permit renewals, and that's increasing as these facilities come up for renewal. We're transitioning them from the older system to the new system. So we expect that to continue to increase as we move forward. So we're almost at 3,000, being halfway through 2017. And revenue, you can see the revenue tracking here as well. So we have about $25 million in revenue since March of 2012. You can see there's a little bit of an aberration in terms of how we... It adjusted itself, but just reflecting the numbers that we have, and that's around how we implemented the fees that year, the new fee schedule. As you know, we tend to hold to wait for adoption, and so you see that reflection here. We got everything we needed to get. So. Yeah. As I mentioned, also, we are processing complaints. So you can see the online complaints that have come in as a percentage of the total complaints that we're processing. So it's sort of fluctuated with the season. You can see the seasonality of the complaints. People, I guess, are a little less cranky in the winter and in the summer. But yes.
There's no legend, folks. And this is my biggest pet peeve. Which one is which?
I apologize. I think the actually had dropped off of the slide. So the darker color are the online submitted complaints, and the lighter ones are the total remaining complaints that have come in via phone.
Thank you.
Apologize for that. So one of the things we've completed and we'll be launching for this new wood smoke season, which starts later this year, November, is new processes and systems to support really the end-to-end process. So this includes the ability to submit complaints online from the public, all of workload management tools, forms for actually doing the investigations, handling exemptions, as well as processing violations. And I have a couple of screenshots just to give you a flavor. So this is what the member of the public would come online, the specific questions that they would ask, be asked to submit for in this particular case, a wood smoke complaint. This would be optimized for a web browser, but can be used on a mobile device as well. You can see our dashboards. So we're identifying and routing investigations to staff, the appropriate staff that are assigned to the region. I apologize, the text is a little small, but this is essentially what it looks like, a full dashboard for the wood smoke program. And then here's an example of the investigation form for the inspectors. So as part of moving to this building, everyone was issued Microsoft Surface tablets. And so these forms are optimized to be used on those touchscreen and capture the information efficiently. So that'll be going live, live now, but heavily in use this coming wood smoke season. We've also been focused last year on the asbestos renovation and demolition process, so putting the entire process online. Right now we just have online payments. And so we're supporting the job submission payment part, as I mentioned, and then very similar functionality around review and approval, changes of jobs, cancellations, and inspections. And so you can see some of the screens, and we've leveraged and reused a lot of design to provide a similar common interface for staff. So for dashboards as well as for the inspections. So for 2018, we have a bunch on our plate, but some key goals. One is transitioning the remaining business operations for compliance and enforcement. So that is the actual training and rollout for the asbestos program. Replacing our systems for all air quality complaints, not just wood smoke, violation processing, mutual settlement, and our reportable compliance activities. The reality is the majority of the design and development, the coding is actually done on these, so we're pretty far. So the majority of our focus this coming fiscal year is going to be on the user acceptance, the training and rollout. As you know, there's a bunch of effort that goes into that, too. We're not done once the code is complete. We've got to make sure our staff know how to use it and just monitor and make sure that we have the support we need. On the permitting side, we're going to continue with some permit application enhancements, renewal enhancements. We have a new financial system that we're putting in place later this year, and so we'll be upgrading our integration to that system, JD Edwards. And we are starting our complex facility implementation. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that and our complex facility strategy. So I showed this graph before when we were talking about the small facilities, and you recall the 70% support. Our complex facility plan is really focused on that remaining 30% and how we're going to handle those. And so we've made some good progress. We've had monthly meetings through all of 2017 and even starting in 2016 with the refineries, specifically looking at how they would be submitting their emissions inventory data. And this is tied into Regulation 12, Rule 15. We've been meeting internally, looking at our modeling parameters for health risk assessments and the work that we anticipate and how we can capture and leverage that information in conjunction with Rule 1118, which will come before you later this year. We've been developing new offset tracking procedures to satisfy some changing requirements from the EPA that's tied to Regulation 2, which is coming for you later this year as well. And then developing really a backlog of features to scale to handle the more complex cases that we have. And so here's some of the key things that we're focusing on initially, allowing the large facilities to submit their annual emissions inventory electronically. We're starting with the refineries and the support facilities, validation tools for our internal staff to identify anomalies so we can see where there may be issues in the reporting of the emissions and then we can identify those. So we're looking at some statistical tools and data analytics to identify those, feeding in that information into our renewal process. So very much trying not to have multiple repetitive activities to reduce our, for us to be more efficient and reduce the burden on the regulated community. And then the ability to publish those inventories to the web so we can publish the public data, the non-confidential data to the web. So with that, I realize that's a lot. I'm happy to take any questions.
Come on. Seeing no questions, well, except for Brad. Go ahead, Brad.
I just want to make a comment that I appreciate. I've had a lot of people complain to me over the years about not being able to respond and get complaints online. I will be talking to them in the next while just to see how efficient, how effective that is. But I'm happy to have that as our direction and that we're getting more and more of those coming through that way.
Carol? Made lots of progress since the last report we had.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you, Jamie. Let's jump over 8 for a moment to see number 9, committee member comments. Do we have any? Is there any other business? See, that didn't take long. We're done with 9. Go ahead.
Yes. It's our pleasure to introduce to you our new health officer.
Oh, okay.
Actually. And I know this has been near and dear to Director Groom's heart. I have the honor to introduce Dr. Judy Catino. And Judith has been on staff for how long, Judith? Have you worked for the district?
Almost 30 years.
No, don't tell them that.
And
started at 9.
I'm going to let her describe a little bit of her background for you because she'll do a much better job than I can. But we have an opportunity to, frankly, fill an important part of the district's outreach. It's really the work we do in so many places, the communities, the industry, just the overall public, to be able to really discuss with them the not only health-related impacts of air pollution, but also just weighing in terms of your decision you need to be making and then the staff in terms of its recommendations on regulations and programs, things like that. And we really, frankly, have a real opportunity to have Judy fill this role that we have needed for some time. So if you don't mind, Judith, if you can give you a little bit of your background, but she is going to be serving as our health officer. Gina, I think it's next 6 months, I think, is the time frame.
Right. Judy's going to be acting health officer while we do the actual recruitment, and we think that it will be a very good fit. We're very excited about it.
Good. Thank you. Welcome aboard, Judy. Still
thank
aboard.
Thank you. Yes, good morning, Vice Chair Hudson and members of the Executive Committee. I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to serve as acting health officer. I started at the district in October of 1980, fresh out of Berkeley Chemical Engineering, and I worked in the engineering department for about 11 years, doing permitting and working on the database and rule development. And I was subsequently I became manager of rural development for 6 years. While it was in the enforcement division, I then worked for 4 years as inspections manager for South Zone. And then I left the district and went to medical school at Touro University College of Osteopathic Medicine in Vallejo. I completed my education there and went to, I worked at the medical school for about a year and a half, and then I worked at Alameda County Highland Hospital for an internship, and then I returned to the district and worked back in the toxic section doing health risk screening, working on Title V, and then working on production system. So I'm so pleased to have the opportunity to use my medical education to work with the board and to reach out to the public health officers in the various counties and really focus on public health in the district.
Thank you, Judy. Okay, Mark?
Well, congratulations, and we look forward to your stewardship during this period. And I graduated from Cal about the same time with an English degree, which probably was a little easier than a CE degree, but you're pretty well qualified. Thank you.
Heaven forbid if we ever put a Stanford member on this board, you'd probably get killed. Okay. Thank you, Judy.
Now, you're probably wondering, Mr. Chairman, actually, the committee, that why didn't we do this before? Because Judith has been a part of us for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. And I think it was, frankly, Jean who I think approached Judith and said...
Like most good things around here.
Yeah. It's Jean's doing, and I should have, frankly, thought of it myself. So just wanted to introduce. And we'll also have Rainey and... Judy, at the board meeting on Wednesday.
Good. Thank you. We have closed session next. It's my understanding we have at least one speaker card. Is it still just one?
It is.
Okay. I will ask that speaker, do you want to speak before or after the closed session? Your choice.
Before.
You're up.
Okay. So this is Chris Coelho.
Okay.
Is it on? Okay. Thank you, Vice Chair Hudson. Thank you, members of the Executive Committee. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Rex. Good morning, everyone. My name is Chris Coelho. I'm the current president of the Employees Association. I've been in the union most of my district career. I am an air quality inspector, and I will say that there have been more online complaints coming in, so it is working. Negotiations are never easy. And this one's no different. It took longer than anticipated. Both sides put in long days, nights, and some weekends. But it was never contentious, and there was even some smiles and some jokes. In the end, we reached an agreement that I believe is the best contract that we can get, and on July 17th, members voted to approve this proposed contract. I come here today to ask for your vote in support of the proposed contract. Both sides worked long and hard on this, and it truly was a group effort. In addition, if approved, I would also like you to invite you to our summer picnic, which is going to be on Saturday, August 19th at the Miller Knox Park in Richmond. Please join us. No golf, but we have softball. Thank you.
We're going to need to know how many wants to go to the picnic so we don't violate the quorum. I know Brian would want me to say that to you.
Thank you, Chris. Okay, let's convene a closed
session. It's a social activity, so the Brown Act does not apply.
Okay, we'll convene a closed session conference with labor negotiators. Government Code 54957.6A. Conference with our agency negotiators, Jack P. Broadbent and Rex Sanders. Thank you. We'll be back. Were we in there that long?
It's good thing the corpus multiforum. It's even warmer.
Are we on, Marcy? Okay, let's reconvene the executive committee meeting. The executive committee met in closed session to confer with our labor negotiators, and we recommended 6-0 vote to take staff's recommendation to the full board to accept these contracts.
Anything else? I do have one question, and I should have asked it, but I don't think it is this retroactive to July 1?
Yes, that would be our intent.
Thank you.
Okay, the time and place of the next meeting is September 18th at the Metro Building, 375 Beale Street at 9:30 a.m. Not seeing any more lights, this meeting's adjourned.